on that decision.
Okay.
They said, that's the way we're going to go.
Okay.
And boy, that's, to me, that's the way you get ahead. Uh-huh. I mean, you uh-huh. look at the data, uh-huh. evaluate it, uh-huh. and then make the decision.
Uh-huh.
That's exactly what they did. And so they set up, they already had a small crew of designers uh-huh. In Texas
okay.
that were part okay. of the group, and they had a, okay. a little hole in the wall where the guy sat. So they designed up the first circuits.
Uh-huh.
And we did the processing there in Worcester
okay.
For the oxide growths and what have you.
Okay.
And then the wages came to us in the center, and we did the implant.
Wow. So okay. so the circuits were designed in Texas, where the process was really developed in Massachusetts, right?
Yeah. They designed in Texas
uh-huh.
and manufactured in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And most of their initial mm-hmm. circuits were mm-hmm. in ceramic packages.
Okay.
And I think they contracted out mm-hmm. for the mm-hmm. packaging of those originally.
Okay. Okay.
We may have done some of them, because we had a military line at that time that we were doing some mm-hmm. some ceramic packaging, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. nothing as many leads as mm-hmm. they required. But we may have done some of the packaging, but I think they may have contracted for okay. the rest, because okay. they weren't into plastic
okay.
At that time.
Okay.
So anyway, they did the first ones, I think, which were, there was a mm-hmm. Random access memory, and there was a read-only
mm-hmm.
memory.
Mm-hmm.
I think these were the two basic things that they started with. Mm-hmm. And they had quite a bit of success mm-hmm. with those, because they went out and then say they were compatible with T-square mm-hmm. L because of the low thresholds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly
yeah,
what the industry wanted. So they had quite a bit of success with that. So then they contracted for a portion of the space in the Worcester plant, and then they uh-huh. put their own process line up there, and then they ran their circuits through that
okay.
line.
Okay.
And initially, we still did the uh-huh. implant. They'd
okay.
come down to us,
yes.
and then
yes.
they'd go back.
Yes.
And then they contracted with accelerators to build a system which
okay.
matched
okay.
ours, so they could put that in up there too.
Uh-huh.
And they did.
Okay.
In fact, going back, it was interesting. At the time we were doing those implants for Mostek,
uh-huh.
was the period that Sprague went through this disastrous strike.
Wow.
Uh-huh. There was a strike that lasted almost a year, I think.
Oh my gosh.
And it that was really the start of the demise of Sprague.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we did the processing. We would get the wafers from them, bring them
mm-hmm.
to the research center,
mm-hmm.
and of course, we were locked in with the strikers, but we had to get supplies like liquid nitrogen and that.
Yes.
And I used to run a truck from North Adams to Worcester,
yes.
get tanks of nitrogen,
uh-huh.
and bring them back and run them through the gates to get them in, so we had nitrogen to operate the system. And we operated that system all in that strike and did all those implants. And of course, when I'd go back and forth, I'd take wafers back and forth.
Wow.
So,
okay.
So, once they got the other system designed, then of course
uh-huh.
they were free of any problems like that. But
uh-huh.
they got that system, and we designed the sample holes.
Okay.
Same,
okay.
And then they were doing all the processing,
okay.
and we
okay.
just would kind of work with them as consultants. For
all.
They were really learning the process, and they. The reason they were successful, I think, is they were just so gung-ho about making that process
okay.
go.
Okay.
Uh-huh. They did. They really they really pushed it.
Uh-huh. So actually, I would like to go back a little bit in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have a few questions regarding the 1960s period before we move on to Mostek.
Yep.
One is that we didn't talk at all about Kurt Liehovitch at all. And I was wondering, about your interactions with him and what he did at Sprague. And,
Kurt didn't really have much to do with ion implantation.
Oh, I see, okay.
Kurt was more of a theorist. Very smart, very intelligent man. In fact, he had the patent which we think, most of us think, should have been pushed. He had the patent, the original patent on integrated circuits and junction isolation, what have you. This is one thing I kind of held against Mr. Sprague, is he took the position that he didn't want to push anybody on our patents for fear that there'd be action that we couldn't handle.
Okay.
And maybe he was right. When I see the amount of dollars involved in litigation presently, it bothers me. But anyway, he held that patent, and he was I think instrumental in the group that we had which was Joe Lindmeyer and Chuck Wrigley, who were involved in the MOS design and activity there at Sprague.
Okay.
We got that started.
Okay.
And Kurt provided a lot of the theory for things that they were doing.
Okay.
While I was there, most of his, no, I shouldn't say most of his time, but a lot of his time originally was spent in Europe as a fellow over there, a Sprague fellow at one of the universities, I think.
Okay.
but then when he came back, he became a part of the research group, but he was primarily, he wasn't related to in any way to processing, what have you. He was simply a theory man. And he left not too well. He loved to play the stock market, and he did pretty well. In fact, he got to the point where he thought he had enough so he could get out of the industry and maybe go into teaching and what have you.
Okay.
So he did that.
Oh.
And that was kind of unfortunate, I think, because not long after he quit, he went to USC.
Yes.
So he called and taught out there for some time. But not too long after he left, we noticed that the stock that he held that brought him the great dividends had capsized. So I'm not sure what, I mean, Kurt would come back once a year or so and see him there, but I don't know.
Okay.
I think he's probably long gone by now.
Yeah, most probably.
but he didn't, he really didn't have, I think he knew what was going on, but he didn't, he didn't show any interest or didn't. Didn't advance anything as far as that program went.
Okay. Also, I wanted to talk with you about the your work on the threshold voltages for transistors. Your work on transistors with variable thresholds.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a key part of the story, and we didn't talk very much about that.
Ah.
So, I mean, what was behind this work, and how did it develop, and what were the results?
Well, initially, and this was probably more fortuitous than anything else. I said back in '64.
Okay.
I first had the idea, and I just wrote up my notebook, and I thought this would be a great way of controlling thresholds.
Yes.
in MOS, and I didn't know a lot about MOS, quite frankly. I'm not a device man, I never was. But I wrote that, and after we got started, after we did the work at Oak Ridge, and then put up the new system, we said, maybe that's an area that we need to look at to see whether we can do something. And so John started the program. John was kind of now the head of that area. And he started the program then to look at implant through oxides.
Okay.
And then implant through oxides to channels.
Okay.
And the initial result looked pretty good. I mean, you've got threshold shifts, whatever. And so we looked at the annealing process. Of course, you say the only problem that everybody looks at is damage. And and so he went back and redid a lot of the studies that we originally had done for kind of the bipolar side of it. On stabilizing the systems by baking and whatever. And found that he got pretty consistent results. And so then he said, well, let's see what kind of variation we can create. And so he went through with different doses and measured the thresholds of these and found that there was a very linear relationship between the dose and the shift, the delta in the shift. And you could very controllably put any or make any voltage available in that transistor by just controlling the dose. And so he really, he did a lot of work on that and really documented it. And we looked at, again, its stability. And in fact, there's a paper published, and I don't have it in my head right now, but we published a paper on this.
I never saw it.
Showing the shifts and what was available. And that really was kind of the start. I think we completely documented the fact that this was a usable thing. And then we got into the, after we did that, we said, hey, now it, maybe it's possible to look at what we can do with complementary MOS, where you've got a PMOS and an NMOS transistor. And so we created it had to be a low temperature process. So the sources and drains we created by diffusion, and as I recall, we recreated the pre-dep for the PNP transistor, I mean for the P channel, with a diffusion, with a implanted dose, so that we could control the resistivity of that pocket, which is critical, of course, in this process. And we worked sometime and finally did create a process which made a very usable CMOS structure.
When
was that? MOSTEC uses that. Or MOSTEC did. I mean, presently, I don't think MOSTEC exists anymore. But they
So when was the CMOS work done? 69, 68?
That was yeah, it had to be about 69 because originally they wanted to get Bulova involved. Bull was interested in CMOS structures for watches, of course. And MasTec was aware of this, and they wanted to try to produce a program with Bulova to produce CMOS chips for the watches. So we went down and put on a show for them. Mm-hmm. And some reason, and not technical, the program didn't fly.
Okay.
So then MasTec took over, and they, I think they produced some watch chips also using that process.
Interesting.
They also produced the first calculator chip for the HP system of calculators. And I think we did some of the implant for that. MasTec did use uh-huh. the process in a number of circuits.
Okay.
As I say, I'm not sure what happened to the Bulova deal, but
okay.
It wasn't okay. technical.
Okay.
So,
okay. Let's see. And also, I was wondering whether you could talk about the Sprague product line in the late 60s. So we talked about the PNP transistors and the
Sprague product uh-huh. line in the late 60s. yeah, they were, well, of course they had their capacitor mm-hmm. line, which is tantalum.
Mm-hmm.
And aluminum electrolytics.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in the late 70s, yeah, they were into ceramics.
Okay.
Capacitors also at that time. They built the Texas facility in Wichita Falls
mm-hmm.
To run ceramic capacitors. In semiconductors, we were into largely linear circuits, mm-hmm. TV applications, what
okay.
have you.
Okay.
A start of some military
mm-hmm.
circuits,
mm-hmm.
But they were primarily linear circuits
okay.
with the exception of some switches they made, which were mm-hmm. the 2000 series,
mm-hmm.
Which they started. They were the first high current, high voltage products
okay. Okay.
on the market.
Okay.
The technology of which was developed
okay.
in the research labs in Sprague.
Okay.
That was their main. The main source of product that they had at that time.
Okay.
They gradually moved out
mm-hmm.
of the TV and radio area.
Okay.
See, they made some FM circuits. But they gradually moved out of that area because mm-hmm. it was a. It just, I think, consumed too much of their test time. That or
mm-hmm.
or our testing was not done correctly.
Okay.
Then
okay.
I'm not
okay.
sure.
I mean, okay. Okay.
But anyway, we gradually moved out and they got into high voltage switching networks.
Okay.
And again, more military product.
Okay. Okay.
And we developed also, we were into the Hall sensor
mm-hmm.
business. We started
okay.
that product and pursued that.
Okay.
In fact, there's still a large portion of Allegro's business is sensors, is
okay.
Hall cell sensors.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what could have been the sales revenues that Sprague would get from semiconductors in the late 60s? I mean, how big was the business?
Oh. Got to be honest about this. Sprague didn't really know how to run the semiconductor business.
Okay.
It never really did much. I mean, they kind of floated around maybe $6 to $8 million a year, something like that, which was really not. Okay. In fact, Sprague Semiconductor was kind of a loss leader in the company. And it was really supported by the capacitor function of the company. And it wasn't until, oh boy, when was that, 90, let's see, they sold, well, Sprague, as I say, Sprague itself started going downhill. I mean, they were sold to Penn Central, and in my estimation, that really pulled the plug because Penn Central didn't know how to run a semiconductor group, and they didn't know how to run a capacitor group either. They may have known how to run railroads, but they didn't know this. And this is strictly my. My take on it, and but I think that's they're the prime reason why Sprague does not exist today. And as I say that kind of hurts a bit because I kind of was there when we started, and I was there when it's gone, and shouldn't have been that way. But anyway, what was I saying about product? The sensor, we started the sensor, say that's now a large part of the business, and there's been a lot of work going on in that area, which some of it I'm not familiar with. In fact, a lot of it I'm not familiar with anymore because it's been a while since I've been associated with them. But I did a lot of work in the area of packaging and primarily the chemistry of surfaces and what have you to correct a lot of problems that they were having with stability in their in their devices. And also the well, I better not mention this one. This is still kind of, I think, in a proprietary area, so I'll leave that one out.
So maybe what we could do is try to go back to the outline that I had here, and start again in 1969, because it's at that time you became the head of R&D. At,
69. I think that came about since Lincoln Vogel had left. He went to the University of Pennsylvania to teach. And so they put me in that spot. I was just primarily involved with the semiconductor research. I wasn't involved with the with the capacitor research at that time. And I think it was kind of a change in name only, because I did the same things I was doing before anyway.
So then you'd be really orienting the research in the semiconductors.
As I say, our prime goal yet at that time was still developing those aspects of implantation which we thought would be valuable in the present present systems.
And how big was the semiconductor group at that time?
At that time, after the strike, we lost people. And I think at that time we had About 25 people, all told. That's engineers and technicians and what have you. Because we still maintained in the center there. We maintained a process area.
Wow,
so
okay.
We could do all of our processing there. We didn't have to rely on Worcester to do our processing because this is where it's what we do is not a consistent thing, and so things that are not consistent don't fit manufacturing groups. So we maintain that, and then the technicians necessary to run that.
Okay. So I know that we talked quite a bit about MOSTEC already and about an implementation at MOSTEC. Would you like to add things to what you said before? Or?
Well, I think by and large MOSTEC was really a good company, and I think its demise is also based on poor judgment by.
Mm-hmm.
I guess United Technology took over them, and I know at the time Bob Palmer was always been a VP, but he was then president of MOSTEC as LJ had left to get involved in what I call money lending operations. I talk with Bob every once in a while, and he'd say, "Boy, what they need just always got turned down when it got up to the board." And he says, "You just cannot run in this business unless you stay abreast of what's going on," which is absolutely correct. And I think that's the reason it went down. But it. Say in my view, it should still be running because it. I thought was a great company. They weren't afraid to gamble. I mean, they would look at the data, assess it, and then make a decision. There's no wishy-washy part about it. And if the decision happened to be wrong because the data was wrong, they would go down and come up fighting again. So, good company.
And I was wondering, how did the relations between Sprague and MOSTEC evolve over time? I mean, there was very close collaboration in.
I think that was a at least on the technical level, that was a good relationship. And we worked even after, you know, they put in their process section in the Worcester plant.
Okay.
And at the same time, they started building. Their facility in Texas, in Carrollton, and they finished that, and the move out of Worcester was very amiable, and we just kind of hated to see them go, really.
But
I think we parted on good.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
So that I think that worked out. That relationship worked out well, and primarily it worked out well because there was good interface between. Their people and our people.
So, which was a lot of personal relations, right, between you and Bob Palmer.
I must say, boy, I haven't seen Bob since he left DEC. Took over that presidency, I haven't seen him since. We used to get together every couple of months talk. You know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I enjoyed Bob. I liked him. He was a good guy.
Okay.
LJ was really good too. I liked him. Sharif, I never could get up to him. I don't know what my problem was or his, but of course he didn't stay with MOSTEC very long anyway. He left quite early in the game. I many times thought of maybe even considering changing and going to work for MOSTEC, but but I just couldn't do it. I'm one of the older people that still has strings that that keep me tied to a which I don't see a lot today.
Would you like to continue? Would you like to stop
here?
Or,
yeah, I don't know what your timing is, but...
So my time is your time, so just...
Yeah, maybe we can... See, I'm going to be gone tomorrow.
Okay.
So if we can finish this tonight, that would be,
be
good.
Okay. So would you like to continue on now? Or?
Well, would let's like see. Did I think we pretty well covered Mostek, didn't we?
Yeah, so I think so. Yeah. So would you like, so maybe we could move on to iron implantation at Sprague after 1971 or so, 72. So did Sprague continue working on the process? What happened then?
Yeah, after 71, we did, well, the initial work on resistor implants was was done earlier.
Okay.
It was 69 and thereabouts. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we did a pretty thorough investigation of resistors as a probably for, we did use have a couple of linear circuits that we were making at that time, which were